All right, so get this. A 1969 California Supreme Court case, People v. Hood, and it still has lawyers talking today. It all boils down to this. How drunk is too drunk to be held responsible for your actions, you know, in the eyes of the law?
It's a question that really gets right to the heart of criminal law. Yeah. And People v. Hood really kind of set the stage for how courts handle intoxication as a defense.
Right.
Especially when it comes to the tricky concept of intent.
Okay, so set the scene for us. What exactly went down in this case?
Okay, so picture this. 1967, we've got David Hood.
Okay.
He's had way too much to drink.
Oh, boy.
He shows up at his ex-girlfriend's house, Susan Bueno.
Okay.
With his brother and a friend.
Uh-oh.
And things escalate pretty quickly.
Oh, no.
He forces his way in and assaults Bueno.
Oh, gosh.
The police are called.
Of course.
And during the arrest, Hood ends up wrestling away an officer's gun and shooting him in both legs.
Wow, talk about a messy situation.
Yeah, definitely a messy situation.
So where does the whole too drunk to be responsible argument come in?
That's where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
Hood's defense was that he was so intoxicated that he couldn't form the intent to commit certain crimes.
Mm.
And that's where the legal distinction between specific intent and general intent becomes really crucial.
I'm guessing that most of us listening aren't lawyers, so break that down for us.
Right.
What's the difference between those two types of intent?
Okay, so think of it like baking a cake, okay?
Yeah.
Specific intent is like wanting to bake a chocolate cake.
Okay.
You have a very specific goal in mind.
Right.
In legal terms, it means the prosecution has to prove that the defendant didn't just commit the act, but they intended to achieve a specific outcome. Like, in this case, assault with the intent to murder.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So where does general intent fit into this cake analogy?
General intent is simply wanting to bake a cake.
Okay.
You have the intent to bake, but the specific type isn't as important. Legally, this means proving the defendant intended the act itself, regardless of the specific outcome.
Okay.
So even if Hood was totally wasted,
right,
if he grabbed the gun and shot the officer, the act alone could be enough to prove his guilt for assault with a deadly weapon.
Okay.
Which is a general intent crime.
So, basically, if you're arguing specific intent, being really drunk could potentially work in your favor. Because you might not be thinking clearly enough to have that specific goal in mind.
Right.
But with general intent, even if you're stumbling drunk, if you do the crime, you're likely still on the hook.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay.
And People v. Hood drew a really clear line in the sand on this, saying that alcohol might affect your judgment, but not necessarily your basic intent to act.
So what happened at Hood's trial? Did the jury buy his too drunk defense?
Well, they found him guilty of assault with a deadly weapon on a peace officer and assault with intent to murder. But here's the twist.
Interesting.
They found him not guilty of battery upon a police officer.
Wait, hold on. Guilty of shooting the officer, but not guilty of the physical altercation that led up to it?
Right.
That seems kind of contradictory, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
And that's exactly why this case is so important.
Okay.
Because the weird verdicts, right, they highlight a major issue with the way the jury was instructed.
Hmm.
Hood actually appealed his convictions, arguing that flawed instructions basically messed up the whole trial.
Okay, let's unpack that a little.
Yeah.
What exactly was wrong with the instructions given to the jury?
Well, there were a couple of big problems. First, the judge's explanation of how intoxication could play a role was super confusing.
Right.
He mentioned it in relation to the intent to murder charge.
Okay.
But he didn't properly explain how it applied differently to the assault with a deadly weapon charge.
So the jury might have thought they could consider Hood's intoxication for both charges.
Right.
When legally, it should only have been a factor for the specific intent crime.
Exactly.
Okay.
And on top of that, the judge failed to tell the jury about a lesser included offense for the assault with a deadly weapon charge. Something like simple assault.
Wait, why is that such a big deal?
Because the jury didn't have the option to consider a less serious charge.
Oh,
even if they weren't totally convinced that Hood was guilty of the more serious one,
right,
they might have just gone with the heavier charge because they had no other choice.
Ah, so that missing instruction really limited their options.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder if that impacted their decision on the battery charge, too.
It does.
Did the California Supreme Court agree that these messed up instructions were a problem?
Absolutely.
Okay.
They overturned Hood's convictions and basically said, look, The jury needs crystal clear instructions, especially when intoxication and intent are involved.
Yeah.
They emphasize that the trial court must tell the jury about lesser included offenses when the evidence supports it, even if the lawyers don't specifically ask for it.
So it's not just about the lawyers arguing their case.
Mm-hmm.
The judge has a responsibility to make sure the jury has all the information they need to make a fair decision based on the law, not just their gut feeling about the situation.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And that's one of the key reasons why People v. Hood is considered such a landmark case.
Right.
It set a major precedent for how courts deal with intoxication as a defense and how crucial clear jury instructions are in ensuring a fair trial.
This is fascinating because it highlights how these seemingly small technical details can have huge consequences.
Right.
Like the wording of those instructions could literally mean the difference between someone being convicted of a serious crime or a lesser charge.
Exactly. It really does show you how much weight those instructions carry.
Yeah.
And how important it is for everyone involved in the legal system to really understand the nuances of these concepts.
So we've got this crucial difference between general and specific intent, a trial with confusing jury instructions, and a Supreme Court decision that emphasizes clarity and fairness. But what does it all mean for us? Why should we care about this case almost 55 years later?
Well, for starters, it's a reminder that cases like People v. Hood don't exist in a vacuum.
Right.
They shape how the law evolves and how we as a society think about thorny issues like intoxication and responsibility.
Okay.
But we'll dive more into those broader implications in just a little bit.
Sounds good.
And we're back, diving even deeper into this People v. Hood case and its impact on the legal world.
Right. It's like this whole thing threw a wrench into the legal system and forced everybody to kind of re-examine how to handle these types of cases.
Exactly.
So how did this case actually change things?
So one of the most significant impacts was on this thing called the mens rea requirement.
Well,
you might have heard that term thrown around, you know, in courtroom dramas.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's not just a fancy legal phrase. It really gets to the core of criminal responsibility.
Okay, I'm all ears. What exactly is mens rea, and how does it relate to our friend Mr. Hood?
Mens rea is Latin for guilty mind.
Okay.
And it basically means proving that the defendant had the mental state required to be held responsible for a crime.
Gotcha.
So did they knowingly do something wrong? Did they intend the consequences?
Right.
People v. Hood really emphasized the importance of proving this guilty mind, especially when dealing with those specific intent crimes that we talked about earlier.
So going back to our cake analogy, if you're arguing specific intent, you're basically saying, hey, my mind wasn't in the right place to form the intent to bake a chocolate cake. Maybe I just wanted to bake something.
Exactly. And since Hood, courts have taken this mens rea concept and really run with it.
Yep.
Creating different levels of mental state, like knowingly, intentionally, recklessly, negligently.
Right.
It adds another layer of complexity to these cases.
I bet it does. I mean, it's one thing to prove that someone did something, but proving what was going on in their head at the time, especially if they were intoxicated, seems like a whole other challenge.
Absolutely. It can get really, really tricky.
Yeah.
Especially when you're trying to figure out the exact level of intent needed for a crime.
Right.
And how intoxication might affect that. It's not like there's a breathalyzer for intent.
Right. You can't just like test someone's blood and say, yep, they had intent to murder at 10:00 p.m.
Right.
It becomes a lot more subjective, you know, relying on witness testimony, expert opinions, and just trying to piece together the defendant's actions.
Exactly.
It really makes you realize how much those jury instructions matter.
Oh, absolutely. Cases like Hood provide a framework for navigating these gray areas, but it's still a very human process, prone to biases and interpretations.
Speaking of gray areas, how have courts dealt with the whole voluntary versus involuntary intoxication issue? Is there a difference in the eyes of the law if someone willingly got drunk versus if they were, say, slip something without knowing it?
That's a fantastic question. And you've hit on another area where People v. Hood had a major influence.
Nope.
The general consensus is that voluntary intoxication, choosing to drink, is rarely a get out of jail free card. Even if you were stumbling drunk, the law generally says, hey, you made the choice to drink, so you have to deal with the consequences.
So the classic, like, I was too drunk to know what I was doing excuse doesn't really fly.
Not usually, but what about the situations where someone is unknowingly drugged? That's where things get a lot more complicated.
Right, because in that case, you can't really hold someone responsible for actions that they took if they were basically under the influence of something that they didn't consent to.
Exactly. Involuntary intoxication is generally treated much more leniently by the courts.
Okay.
It's considered a much stronger defense because the person didn't choose to be in that altered state of mind.
That makes sense. But I'm guessing even with involuntary intoxication, it's not an automatic not guilty, right?
You're right.
Yeah.
The defense still has to prove that the intoxication was truly involuntary.
Right.
And that it directly impacted the defendant's ability to form the necessary intent for the crime.
So even if you were drugged without your knowledge, you might still be held partially responsible if there's evidence that you still acted with some level of intent.
That's the general principle, yeah.
Okay.
It all comes down to the specific facts of the case and how those facts are presented in court.
Okay, so we've got voluntary intoxication, involuntary intoxication, specific intent, general intent.
Right.
It seems like People v. Hood opened the door for a whole new level of legal analysis and debate around these issues.
It absolutely did.
Yeah.
It forced the legal system to grapple with this complex relationship between intoxication, intent, and criminal responsibility.
Right.
And that's why this case is still so relevant today. It's right. not just about one night in 1967.
Right.
It's about this ongoing evolution of how we think about justice, responsibility, and the impact of alcohol on human behavior.
You know, this case has really gotten me thinking about how we as a society view intoxication and personal responsibility.
Right.
It's a topic that touches on so many aspects of our lives, from like drunk driving
yes.
to consent laws to like even just our social expectations around drinking.
You've hit on something really important.
Yeah.
People v. Hood isn't just about one specific legal case.
Right.
It's a reflection of our broader cultural attitudes toward alcohol, the choices we make, and how we as a society choose to hold people accountable for their actions when those actions are influenced by alcohol.
It makes you wonder, how much do our individual choices matter? Where do we draw the line between personal responsibility and holding people accountable for actions they might not have taken if they hadn't been under the influence?
That's a debate that's been going on for centuries.
Yeah.
And it's not going away anytime soon.
Right.
But cases like People v. Hood force us to confront these questions head on and to think critically about how we want our legal system to handle these very complex situations.
It's like People v. Hood provided the vocabulary for a whole new conversation about these issues, a conversation that's still very much in progress.
That's a great way to put it. It created a framework for analyzing these cases in a more nuanced and sophisticated way.
Right.
But beyond the legal arguments and precedents, there's another layer to this story that's important to remember, the human element.
Right.
We've talked a lot about how this case impacted legal proceedings, but what about the actual people involved?
Yeah.
Their lives were forever changed by this one night.
You're right. It is easy to get caught up in all the legal stuff.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we're talking about people's lives that were deeply affected by this.
Exactly. We have David Hood.
Right.
Who clearly had issues with alcohol.
Yeah.
And ended up committing a violent act with really serious consequences.
Yeah. And then we have Officer Elijah.
Right.
Who was injured in the line of duty and, you know, their lives, the lives of their families
right.
forever changed because of what happened that night.
Yeah. And it's a reminder that the law, while, you know, super important for maintaining order and justice.
Right.
Doesn't always address the underlying issues that lead to these situations.
Right.
Things like addiction, mental health.
Yeah.
Social inequalities.
Right.
That can contribute to someone ending up on the wrong side of the law.
It makes you wonder, is punishment always the right answer?
Mm.
Should the legal system be doing more to address those root causes, those underlying causes,
right.
and help people, you know, get back on track?
That's a question society has been grappling with for a really long time.
Yeah.
But, you know, it seems like we're seeing this shift towards considering alternatives to punishment,
right.
particularly in cases involving substance abuse,
yeah.
mental health issues.
Right. There's this growing movement toward incorporating restorative justice practices.
Yes.
Which focuses on repairing the harm caused by crime rather than simply punishing the offender.
That's encouraging.
Yeah.
It's a recognition that sometimes people need support
yeah.
and rehabilitation more than they need to be locked up.
Exactly. It's about, you know, finding a balance between holding people accountable for their actions, but recognizing that people can make mistakes, sometimes terrible ones.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean they're beyond redemption.
Exactly. I think that's a key takeaway from this whole discussion.
Yeah.
The law isn't always black and white. There are shades of gray.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to human behavior.
So circling back to People v. Hood.
Okay.
What are the biggest lessons we can learn from this case, not just as legal experts,
right,
but as human beings trying to navigate a really complex world?
Well, I think People v. Heard forces us to confront the complexity of intent, especially when alcohol is involved.
Right.
It reminds us that intoxication, while not an excuse, can be a significant factor in a person's actions.
It's also a reminder that there's always more to the story than meets the eye.
Yes.
And that judging someone's actions without understanding the full context, you know, it can lead to unfair outcomes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We need to approach these situations with empathy and a willingness to look beyond the surface to try and understand the underlying factors that contribute to human choices, both good and bad.
It's about, you know, recognizing the nuance of human behavior.
Yes.
And understanding that, you know, sometimes good people make bad choices.
Right.
Especially under the influence.
Yeah.
It's a reminder to have compassion.
Mm.
And recognize that justice isn't always about punishment. Sometimes it's about giving people a chance to make things right.
Well said. I think we've covered a lot of ground today.
Yeah, we have.
Exploring the legal complexities of People v. Hood, its lasting impact on the criminal justice system, and, you know, the broader questions it raises about intoxication, intent, and personal responsibility.
And as with any good deep dive, we're left with more questions than answers.
Yeah.
But that's the beauty of it all, isn't it? It's about expanding our understanding, challenging our assumptions,
right,
and continuing to wrestle with these really difficult questions.
The conversation doesn't end here.
So to our listeners, we leave you with this. Think about the role of intoxication in our society, how it intersects with the law, and how we can work towards a justice system that balances accountability with compassion and recognizes the complexity of human behavior.
Until next time, keep those minds curious and engaged.